Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
There go Bob Proctor, my mentor. I was mesmerized. He was falling to the roof like, you can be the best surgeon. You're trading time for money. That was me. I was trading time for money. I want more freedom. I want to be free to enjoy my time with my kid.
How was that experience?
The war end when I was 5 years old. My dad was captured into prison for 7 years. We lost our house. We lost everything. My mom was about 29 years old, I think. So I don't know how she survived.
Wow.
But she did. At one point, she really turned crazy. She became mentally ill because she worried too much about money.
That's Dr. Dad, a man who survived a civil war, lost his father to a prison camp, and watched his family torn apart in the most devastating way possible. Yet somehow, decades later, in a country he had never seen, speaking a language he didn't know, he built not just a career, but a life that most people only dream of. If you ever wondered how someone rebuilds from nothing, no money, no degree, no direction, and still becomes a millionaire dentist in America, this episode will stop you in your tracks. Dr. Dad was just 5 years old when the Vietnam War ended. In a single moment, his world disappeared. His father, a decorated Air Force major, was taken to a re-education camp for 7 years. His mother, only 29 years old, was left with 4 children and no safety net. She sold fried bananas on the street, taught part-time, and worked until broke, mentally and physically. All the while promising her kids every night he's coming home. And one day, he did. He walked hundreds of miles, broken but alive. By then, Dr. Dad had already learned what survival really meant and the quiet strength to keep going when no one was watching. He took a very curious path, first as a graphic designer, then somehow as an adult, he went back to school to become a dentist, all the while supporting his family. A late boomer, yes, but one who never stopped booming. What happened next? How he built one of the first laser-based dental practices on the West Coast and then walked away from it all to pursue a higher calling is what makes this story unforgettable. This is a story about courage that doesn't expire, about rebuilding when the world breaks you, and finding purpose after the pain has passed. Because as Dr. Dad proves, legacy isn't inherited, it's earned. This is the Immigrant Millionaire Investors, a movement rewriting what's possible and prove that immigrants don't just come here to survive, they come here to rise. I hope you enjoy it. Let's dive in.
Hello, I'm Pommy. And I'm Nancy. Together, we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio. We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment. This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
Okay, so Dr. Dad, thank you for joining us today. Let's start at the very beginning. Tell us a little bit about your life when you were in Vietnam. Like, how was that growing up there?
Thank you for inviting me here. So I was born in Vietnam in 1970. And at that time, my dad was in the Air Force. He was a major in the Air Force. So we live in the military compound, the Air Force compound, our house inside there. So that's what I remember. And then the war end when I was 5 years old, my dad was captured into prison for 7 years. We lost our house. We lost everything. My mom was about 29 years old, I think, with 4 of us. Me, I'm number 3, so I'm 5 years old. My younger brother is 3 years old. My sister, 7 and 9. So we didn't have a house. We live with my grandma. And then we live on summer, me and my younger brother Ken, we were sent to my uncle's farm in the suburban nearby. And we just go to school. I don't know how we survive. we just do what we did. My mom did a lot of things, you know, a lot of jobs. She became a teacher after that.
Mm.
She was selling, you know, stuff on the streets. She was making fried banana to sell, I remember, in front of the school. Do a lot of things to survive.
How long was the war? And then you were in the middle, like you were born probably as the war was already going on. So how was that experience?
Prior to the end of the war, mm-hmm. to that event, the 1975,
mm-hmm.
I was young. I was under 5 years old. I don't remember. I just remember that we have a lot of fun. We went to our cousin a lot. So my dad have a motorcycle and he carried six of us all the same. So
wow.
The tank right here, he's riding. And then this me sitting here and my younger brother is right here. My second sister right here. My mom and my older sisters in the back, all in one motorcycle.
Was it a full-size motorcycle?
Yeah, a full-size motorcycle. It's Honda, I think. Yeah, one of those black ones with a tank in the front.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went like that. He had a car, but that's a better way to travel. So we went everywhere. I remember just going to my Uncle Hal, hanging out with cousin. We have a lot of cousins. We have four on my mom's side. We have two uncles that we're close to. Each of them have six kids.
Oh, wow.
So
like 36.
Yeah, that's a lot. So that was the time we lived together, 10 of us together.
In one household.
Family, one household.
And that was after the war?
After the war. Immediately after the war, we lived there. So it was fun for me. I didn't remember a lot before the war. Some. I remember playing like what we call like playing tag right here. Mm. My dad was the bad guy. No, my dad was a jerk. You know, chasing after my cousin, one of my older cousins. He's the mean guy. My dad ran after him, got him, and then we all vote on are we going to punish him or not? Like, fun. And all of a sudden, he disappeared. Like, I didn't know where he went.
No one, like, just one day he just...
Yeah, they basically told him to go and do a three-day re-education. For all the high-ranking officer, he went with nothing. He said, oh, I'll be home. And he went, that's it. And he got him for 7 years. And then we just grew up like that. And once, you know, my mom just said, oh, he'll be home. He's there. And then we just move on. We just leave, I guess. You know?
Did your mom know where he went?
Yeah, later on, we know. We visited him a couple of times to the camp also, seeing him there. And then they moved him to the middle of the country. They moved him a lot. And until the day that they release him and he walked home.
He walked home?
Yeah, he walked, he hopped train, whatever, he came home.
How far was he when he was released?
Far, like middle of the country.
Wow. Like, and you live at that time in the south?
That time in the south, in Saigon. And he was in the central of the country.
And so basically you lost communication with him for the last few years then?
Yeah, yeah. So we write letter, you know, I still remember my mom reading us his letter to us. And then we wrote letter to him very young. Like, I didn't want to, but my mom said, write it to him, you know. So now, remember, I don't know if she kept it. My mom might have kept that letter. So that's how we get connected. We should write letter to him.
Do you remember what he wrote? What he wrote to you?
I didn't remember, but my mom read it to us. Mm. It always starts with to you and our children, like to my below and our children. It always starts like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
That makes me emotional. Yeah. I want to cry. How did your family, I know like you're a very positive person, but like how did your family deal with the really night and day life that happened after your dad's arrest?
So before that, you know, we would, you know, my mom living a good life. She went to French school. Mm. You know, my grandfather was very, you know, he was a general also in the French regime.
Yeah.
And he moved to, so a lot of my uncle, my grandpa, an uncle on both sides was in the military. At that time, we just grow up, you become a military. I would be too.
Mm.
So my mom was doing great. I think she was working in the Air Force, you know, somewhere in there, help a civilian job, but in the military compound. She was doing fine, having if the war didn't end, I'm sure we have a couple more younger brothers. You know the way it is, right? Every 2 years, I don't know how they did it. But when after that, I think my mom struggled.
Mm.
She find ways, she bike far away to be a elementary teacher and things happen. I don't know how we survive, didn't they? She didn't have a stable job and four of us too little. We live with my grandma at the end. And then some of my uncle and aunt sent us some money from here, some help from other uncle from there, both sides. So I don't know how she survived.
Wow.
She did. But at one point, she really turned crazy. She became mentally ill because she worried too much about money. Mm. Now, I understand now what the mind and the worry and doubt that caused that. Mm. So she was hospitalized when I was about, I think, in the 70s, like 78, 79. I was 8, 9 years old.
Oh, okay.
So my older sister went in the hospital and live with her, take care of her. She saw everything.
Oh.
Yeah, but so we were sent to my uncle in the farm, and I love it. That's my paradise. Mm-hmm. That's like every summer I went there, and I didn't want to go home because I love it. I love nature. I love the farm. I love working the farm. I just love it.
Wow.
And to be honest, looking back, I don't know how did we survive? My mom did what she could, get the help from my grandma, my mom, and then my uncle on my mom's side.
Yeah.
There are two of them that we were really close to. And I was influenced by one of them, the big uncle who had the farm. Mm-hmm. He's very have a good mindset. He started from scratch too. Mm-hmm. After the war, he went to the country and become a farmer. Mm-hmm. He was a pharmaceutical rep.
Oh, wow.
Become a farmer. And he applied technology. Wow. And then he make it so good. And then he raised his family and he raised us. So that's where I got my influence formed also.
It seems like you had a very close-knit family. And I think like that kind of support was really crucial to you guys actually getting to this point today.
So your mom, when your dad was around, what was she like occupation?
She started school to she wanted to be a pharmacist.
Oh.
But then us came. She loved us. She loved the children. She like you guys are my everything.
Yeah.
So she dropped school, of course. She was very young. My dad was already an officer at the time. So he's stable. We travel everywhere. I was born in the Central Coast. Mm. So wherever my dad went to with the Air Force, he based anywhere, we follow. Mm. So my older sister was born in Saigon. My second sister and me was born in the Central Coast. That's why we look so dark, maybe. And then my younger brother born in the mountain area in Pleiku.
Oh, Pleiku.
Pleiku, yeah. Okay. Way up there. Beautiful. And then we moved out to Saigon again. Just follow him. So my mom doing a lot of different jobs, just mainly just housewife.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, she found a job working to supply, supply.
Like buyer kind of.
Yeah, buyer, supply in the Air Force.
Yeah.
You know, working, you know, with my dad's friend. I remember that. Mm-hmm. So she was working also.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like not like career-wise, she's helping out. Yeah.
So like tell me a bit about like your life, like right before you moved to the United States, like that was, you were 21.
1991.
So I wanted to know about like that experience when you were talking about your high school, like what happened after high school when you were there.
So high school was fun. We walked to school when we were in first grade, you know, and then bike to school. And then we have a lot of fun there. After high school, we found out that I was not allowed to go to college. I applied to 3 schools back then.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what I wanted to do first.
So yeah.
One of my cousins I close with, she went to a school about economy, college mm-hmm. economy, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to do. Okay. If you do it, I do the same.
Yeah.
I apply mm-hmm. and deny
mm-hmm.
because from our ranking, you know, they say you're not allowed to apply here.
So explain a little bit more to the audience. Like, what does that mean? Like, why were you and your family not allowed to go to college?
It was because of my dad's background. He was captured. So I remember at that time there was ranking and we were number 12. Number mm-hmm. 13 is criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Like criminal. And then we are number 12.
So you're ranked based on your dad's arrest. So like whatever crime he was accused of committing against the communist regime, the severity was ranked 12. What was the cutoff to not good to go to college? Was it like 5 or
no? It depends, because my wife
yeah.
my wife family they come from the same
mm.
her dad was higher ranking
mm.
but in her district she was allowed. Or maybe because she's smarter, or maybe because they have money, whatever. But my older sister, she's very smart. She want to go to school of design. She love cooking, design, mm-hmm. baking. She's very, very good with her hand. She was way above the passing rate.
Mm-hmm.
But because of our background,
yeah.
she was not admitted. And her best friend got admitted.
So all your, both your older siblings, same thing.
Yeah,
rejected.
Same thing. You had to be very like on the top, or we had to pay money, something like that. Mm. So when I went, I got denied and won. The other two, my grade was above, but it's not like extremely above. So it's like you have to be a certain rank before you get in.
So basically, it's like if you are above average, but you have this family kind of like burden, you can't get in. But unless you were like exceptional, you're like top in.
And then also money. I don't think we didn't have money too.
Yeah.
So my youngest brother, he just got hidden in the fire.
Yeah.
So I did nothing from 18 to 21, just doing odd job. Like I was telling you earlier, just doing things to survive. At that time, my dad came back. He become a designer for his cousin company. Mm-hmm. They weave rug. They weave like you know, like the
carpet.
Rug. Yeah, the carpet, little rug, to export into Europe.
Okay.
So he designed it. He learned how to do it. He bring it home. We doing it. I think I was 12 years old when me and my younger brother, we work for our neighbor. We making our first job is telling for me. We making paintbrush from bamboo, and then toothpaste cover, aluminum toothpaste, and pig fur. I don't know where I find it. He gave it to us. We rolled it. We put it together. And we got paid how many cents or whatever. I forgot. Based on that. So that's how we make money.
Wow.
And then we bring it home. We all doing it, playing it, having fun. It, and then give it to him. He give us money. And then he have some other job. He said, hey, you want it? He need labor, right? So 12 years old, I make money and then give it to my mom. I think we all gave it to our mom. And that's how we survive.
So when you were denied your college entrance, did you kind of figure that like your life in Vietnam is basically sort of like manual labor type that you would have to be?
Yeah.
You kind of accepted that was your fate?
Yeah, I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I remember just sometimes I don't know what to do. I have no guide, no direction. And my dad, he's working at the time. He brought the thing home.
Yeah.
And then we work on that. Yeah. We earn some income. It's not like stable. I don't have a job. I didn't even apply for a job. I think I was applying for something. And he just said, like, don't waste your time. Study English.
Wow.
He went here for training two times. Say, learn English. He just keep doing that. He taught me also. I went to English class at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the job that I wanted to apply for right before we left was I wanted to become a tourist driver. Because my older sister boyfriend back then, he was a tourist driver. He was doing very well. He take a foreigner, a Vietnamese who came back from outside country, from the U.S., he take them travel everywhere. It was a very good job. So I got my license in Vietnam. I know how to drive, but I didn't have a car. I didn't apply for anything yet. So I'm in the middle of that. I was a security guard for one of my friend dad. He has a company near the beach. He needs someone to guard that building. I came there. I just live there. And I become a security guard doing nothing, basically.
Do you remember what you made weaving those rugs? Uh-huh. Do you remember how much they paid you? Oh, did they
pay? Very little. So Vietnamese money, a dollar is equal to 23,000 Vietnamese money.
Yeah.
I have to check with my family again. I don't know.
Did they give you a dollar?
No, not a dollar. In Vietnamese dollar. Yeah. It's some very small.
Okay, so 23 is dong, right? Dong is your money.
Dong.
So 23,000 dong equals $1.
$1.
So did they give you like 5,000 dong?
5,000 dong.
For one? Because it takes time, right? It's not fast.
It means so long. No, I don't know. I don't think it's a lot. It's like like little money. We can use it for something fun. We can give it to a family and buy some
like
food.
But rent a house or something like that.
No, we didn't have to pay rent. We live with my grandma.
Yeah.
But enough to get by, to buy some stuff. To do something, and it's something, you know, for fun to make money.
So I think it's really interesting how your first job was doing a paintbrush, and then you kind of got into making the rug, and then because you start developing different skill set, right? then you have inspiration to become a driver, tour guide, not even the tour guy. Right,
the driver. Right, every step is getting a little bit better pay, but
it's like there's improvement. Like you're growing like linearly, but you know, and that's what's really interesting about you, because from there when you came to America,
we'll get to that. So, right, we'll get to that part.
Yeah. So it's interesting of never ending improvement in your skill set, your mindset.
Yeah. So okay. So what was the thing that got, did you want, so your dad told you go learn English. So you always felt like you wanted to come to the United States then?
To be honest, I'm going back there. I never thought that that idea of going here is like way, like very vague. We never, that was the first time we flew an airplane. I would always tell my kids right now, it's like, what, dad, what are you doing? It's like, airplane. So every time we sit, we live in an alley, right?
Yeah.
So you look up, wherever you see an airplane go by, we all run out. Oh. Airplane. We never thought of like I would be in an airplane, let alone going to America.
Yeah.
But my aunt, you know, she went here to study abroad.
Oh, wow.
Right before the war.
Oh, that's
1975.
Wow. So she, okay.
So she went here. She was in her teen, late teen. So my grandfather have money, sent her here to study.
And vision.
She studied and she stayed. Because the war ends, she stayed.
Like, never left.
All the aunt in that area, because the aunt didn't go to the military, right? So she stayed. The uncle was in the military, but the aunt was there, a couple of them. So she's the aunt who sponsored us, who helped us to settle down when we first arrived in El Monte.
Yeah.
So she came here. So that was,
So she applied for you guys to come here?
No. She just helped us. We have a sponsor because if you don't, the government will help because it's between the two governments.
So basically you apply to be political, like seek political asylum kind of refugee to come to the United States. But you're late, right? Because I never knew that in the 90s they still had refugees coming because I was under the impression like right after the war ended, that was when the refugees came. So you guys stayed much longer.
Yeah. We didn't have money. People who escaped, they have money because if you have money, you can escape by boat, but it costs a lot. They remember is they calculate by gold, not by money, like 1 pound, 1 ounce of gold, whatever. We don't have money. We lost everything. So escaping is that's not an idea.
Yeah.
So
people who came
early
have to have
have to have money
and
they had to risk their life to go by boat.
Yeah.
They went to Thailand.
Pirates or, and everything.
Or that's what Indonesia. That's my uncle. Like a lot of other people did. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the third country, like you know, another
like
sponsored
Australia,
country.
US.
So for us, it's different. Mm. Like we didn't think that we can, and all of a sudden they have that. And then my dad's just like he saw the idea. This is freedom. This is it. Because he couldn't do a lot of things that he could do before. Mm-hmm. After he got home, he had to be humiliated. He was totally different after the war. But he went to work. Yeah. You know, he put his ego down and worked and bring us here. So
was it a long process to get the?
It was pretty fast. Yeah. I remember my sister say, go home, don't work anymore because whatever it is, you know, we just don't want to do it, anything. She was learning 30 something. She dropped too. She refunded the money. She said, you don't want to mess with anything. Cut everything, ready to go.
Like whatever that. they say, go.
So we went home, we prepare within a couple months. And so a lot of us came here at that time, same thing. That's how I met my wife. Same situation.
But same
that
was time in frame
same
as well.
Time.
Wow.
We all went to PCC. We have a whole group of students. We speak Vietnamese outside. And then we take ESL, we take English one, we took chemistry. That's how I met her brother. We met in the spring break trip.
Wow.
So we all came at the same time.
So when as you were preparing your flight, for your flight, what was your like imagination of what the US was going to be like and when you were there, because you've never been on even a plane, so what were you thinking it's gonna be
the
like?
Only thing that we know is from our dad. He came here twice to train as an officer and he chose to stay. So when the war ended, he was one of the one who arranged for people to come here by airplane, like officially. He could have done that.
He could have been on the flight.
Yes, but he went outside. And my mom was mad at him. It's like, this is what you want. This is it. So, you know, I love my country. There's no sweet potato there. There's no pink sky there. We always tease him that. He loved his country. So he wanted to stay. He wanted to stay. And he got to freeze him. You know, all of that. So we always kind of tease him, you know, because of that. But I think it's meant to be. It's something that taught us. So the resilience, whatever it is that we stay there, help us to know who we are. And I just texted my family yesterday about this and about another thing that I remember my dad, you know, when he passed away, you know. So whatever happened, it's happened for you. Whatever the worst happened, it's happened for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your dad was the one who came here. What was he telling you the U.S. was like?
So he said that they don't wear jeans there.
They don't. I don't wear jeans in the U.S.
Because, like we're excited. We go shopping. I never have jeans before. I never have a shoe before. That's my first shoe.
What were you wearing?
Slipper or bare feet.
Like no tennis shoe, no
shoe. No shoe ever. So my first tennis shoe was the shoe I bought to go here. It's bigger than my head. It's like, it looks weird.
So you can grow into it.
Yeah. And then my sister, my older sister is very good. She designed everything.
Yeah.
She sew, she make the clothes for us. So the clothes that we wear we have a picture of, like, we left. That was the one she designed. But my dad, you know, because I think that's what he thought. It's like, they don't wear jeans. They don't let them see your feet. That's not good.
Yeah.
A lot of things he said, that's not true, you know?
What else did he say? Huh? I'm just curious. What else did he say?
So he said that it's boring here. It's not fun. He loved the country. He loved the food here. And I just remember that we were laughing about that. Like, they don't wear jeans. And then shoe, what else? So he said a lot of things because he was there.
But probably because he was in the military basis, right?
Maybe.
So,
yeah.
So
he
they
went
didn't
for
wear,
training.
Yeah, so they were for training.
It was cold.
They're not wearing
casual.
They're wearing your uniform. They have their military boots.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like strict. So there's like.
But there's a lot of things too because of the, we call it paradigm now, what I teach, the belief,
yeah.
Right? Culture.
Yeah.
Culture is different.
Yeah,
this is how he is growing up. Yeah. Family life here, and maybe he was here. It was not as fun as he could. He didn't want it to grow up like that. But then I'm sure he had regret because a lot of his friends when they went,
yeah.
They successful already. They brought up the family, and he stayed.
Yeah.
So,
but probably because of that, you know, like if he thought that in comparison to Vietnam, he'd rather live there.
Yeah.
That's why he was willing to take that risk because of what impressions he had before.
So now we came here and said, we have sweet potato here. We have sweet scallop.
We have everything. So you took your first flight, right? Like how did it feel to be on that first plane when you knew you were coming to US?
Yeah.
And that's a really long flight, right? From Thailand to here.
It's a long flight. So we flew to Thailand. We stayed there for 7 days. We have so much fun. We make new friend there. We went crazy because we didn't know what to do. We just have Thai.
Yeah.
And we flew here. So
did you guys flew via Korea then?
No, Northwest Airlines.
No.
Yeah, I forgot the.
So Vietnam.
I think Vietnam Airlines.
It was Vietnam Airlines.
Thailand.
Yeah.
And then Thailand Korea, to
Northwest Airlines. Where did you transit? Do you remember?
Because I think it's Korea.
Oh,
Northwest.
Yeah. We stopped and either Korea or Japan. I forgot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's been a long time. But we stopped and then we went.
How did it feel when you boarded the plane? Was it really tiring?
It's really weird. I was crying when I left. I walked to the runway.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have the thing to walk there.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was hanging on the roof.
Oh, saying bye to you.
Saying bye to me. All my friend, I was crying. I look back like, am I going to return? I don't know. This is a new country. I don't know anyone. I don't know. It's funny thought, like how my children will be. They're going to forget me over Vietnam. I thought about that. Like,
well, you didn't have kids at that time.
But I I will be there. I'll become American. My kid will forgot about the culture. Like, all the crazy thought. Like, I have no idea. To be honest, I have no idea of who I want to be, of what it would be here. And I remember the last night my friend came to my house. We didn't sleep. We just hang out. We party. My sister friend, like all of us, our friend came over to say goodbye.
Wow.
And my older sister, she have her boyfriend there. They almost get married.
Oh.
If they got married, she had to stay.
Oh.
That's the rule. So they didn't get married just because he can come. And then he came a year later. So it was crying. My sister crying. And then when I walk out, I was crying. And looking back at my friend, like, I didn't know what to do. You know, it's just like, this is huge. And so, you know, I think I started to do some of the writing in here, as writing for my friend, my best friend back then. Oh, my sister, me too, was writing on the plan. We should write down and look at the country the last time, you know, like to the plan. It's like, wow, did I have a window? I don't know, but maybe I reach over, right? It's too long. But first time ever. And then came to Thailand, and then we just forgot about everything.
So, for 7 days, yeah. Start partying.
to start partying. It was hot.
Yeah.
We took up everything. It was so hot. We were short only. And then it was crazy. And we spin egg for fun because we have 2 egg a day, a meal.
That's there. What you got to eat?
So rice and egg and cabbage soup.
Oh.
At first day, it was like, oh, egg. We love it. But then after second day, 2 egg a meal. No one want egg. So we have a basket of egg. So guess what? We spin egg. If it points to you, you eat right away.
What if you had a whole bunch of?
Oh, yeah. That's the guy.
Okay, he, you he get protein.
Salmon, egg. And then
protein overload.
Yeah. And it was just, we didn't know what to do. We just enjoy. We just have fun.
You were at a camp.
A camp.
Was it like, what is a camp like? Is it like actual camp?
The camp next to criminal again. So we were talking to the criminal. We give them some food. So,
there's a fence.
So we on this side, we prepare to go.
Yeah.
They scream us for help.
Yeah.
And then my dad said, do not cry. Do not cry. Especially my sister. They cry.
Yeah.
And they cry, they see you have red eye, you stay.
Oh, because they think you're sick.
Yeah, there's family who stay there for a month.
Oh.
Can you remember a month? They came there and they say, do not cry. So we just play, gamble, whatever. And then it's time for eye drop. We all lay down and eye drop so that you don't have red eye.
Wow.
You will stay. So that was crazy. And then.
Did you know that you have to stay in Thailand for 7 days? Or?
We know.
Okay, so
7 days, they do screening, paperwork. A lot of health screening, and then make sure you're not sick before you go to the destination. So there's a lot of family go to other country, Canada, Europe.
We went
here because we have our aunt.
Mm-mm.
Our aunt's kind of sponsored and help. If we don't have anyone, I think they go somewhere in the East Coast or Camp Pendleton.
Right. Yours is very close to.
And then they find some sponsor. So that's what it is.
So when you landed in the US, like the first few days, what was your impression difference between what you had imagined and what your dad had kind of told you?
So like, it's like really overwhelming. We went to San Francisco and then to LAX. I remember our uncle came with a pickup truck. So all the luggage in there. And then we split to a different car and they go 80 miles per hour. It was like, woo, what is this? 80 miles per hour. It's like, so I fell asleep. Like car sick or maybe jet lag.
Yeah.
We overwhelmed like, oh my God, look at all of that. The light, the freeway, like everything's like crazy. So the drive is different too. And then we came there, we jet lag, we laying there on the floor. People all over come to greet us. Our cousin, he was little, the cousin that we stayed with who taught how to use microwave. He was 5-6 years old. He jumped on us. You guys are boring. Wake up, play
really
with me.
Did that?
Because he wanted to play.
Oh. That's it.
He was born. He was the only son. So we all of us came and we just like.
We're like, we're having jet lag. So you love
jet lag?
So 5-year-old cousin taught you how to use a microwave.
So my aunt went to work. He said, stay home. Mm. It was October. No, August. It was summer. So he stayed home.
Yeah.
He say, follow me. This is how you use a microwave.
Follow me, little boy.
Wait, yeah, little boy.
Five years old boy.
Very short. We just follow him. Okay. This is how to use a microwave. Boom, boom, boom.
Uh-huh.
This is how to open the first meals in there. Whoa, we're meal? That make the whole gallon of milk? Can we drink? Because we never have milk to drink in Vietnam. You know? So all of that, and we walk to the supermarket, and we buy stuff, and we walk home. So it's like crazy. She rent a house for us nearby.
Okay.
We get some kind of supplement from the government.
Yeah.
And then we went to ESL, ESL class.
Mm-hmm.
The whole family, except my mom, she stay home and cook. You know, but
was it all day?
All day. So you just go there, study ESL.
Yeah.
And I study type, you know, I started to learn how to type, learn some like other stuff.
Yeah.
And then 2 months, I raised my hand to go to work. The lady came, they say that who want to go to work? There's a job for you, $5.25 an hour.
Wow.
In downtown LA, doing zero copy in the printing industry. I raised my hand. I go right away. And then and that's how I start.
So how did you start? So you started working and then how did you, you say you went to PCC. Like how did that happen?
Oh, okay. So in the first 2 months, actually not true. The first money, the first $20 I made was helping my uncle, my younger brother. He doing delivery.
Mm.
He was in furniture delivery. So we went and cleaned up one of the house.
Mm-hmm.
They move out. So we clean up. We just take everything out. We got paid $20. First $20. I was like, whoa. whoa, that's it. This is a lot. That's a lot of money. And then we do a lot of things. Yeah, we do sewing. We cut the thread. You know, we call it like
trimming. Yeah.
My dad was doing that, ironing. We do whatever it is. So I went to work there. $5.25 an hour
at the
print shop, Columbia Printing, that shop. So I capital with my aunt, with that cousin, the 6 years old cousin. So we have three of us. We go carpool. If I don't, she cannot carpool. So I go with her. She dropped me there and I walked to downtown.
Where did she drop you off?
Like somewhere in Wilshire Boulevard, because she had to go on.
Oh.
Yeah, 6th Street, Wilshire. And I walked to my shop.
Oh, okay.
If the day she's not, then I take the bus. Okay. I take the bus there. So I worked there for a couple months. You know, I'm learning English, you know, to read, that live, and all of that. As I told you, I didn't understand a lot, so he write it down for me. And then one day, my younger brother called me. He got a job printing work too for a Taiwanese boss nearby, near home. And he's allowed us to go to college, and he's better. So he's like, hey, let's go to work here. So I quit that job. I jumped to this one because, so this one's just my younger brother, me, and another one of our uncle and a friend. We all came about the same time. Mm-mm. So we work there full time and we go to PCC full time at the time.
So what, like during the day you?
During the day I work. And then attend some class early in the morning, and then you go to work and then get out go to class again, whatever. He's very flexible, very nice, very nice. Okay. So I'm very grateful for him.
So he allowed you just finish the work.
Yeah, whatever we do.
Whatever you do, just finish it. You can work later, earlier, but this, you have to finish this part of work.
We're the only one who know how to run his shop. He bring the job here, but my younger brother, he's the one who know more.
How did he know how to print?
I guess from the ESL school, they find job for you.
Oh.
So after 2 months, you had to find job for
you.
So when you have job, the supplement for the government, they cut the supplement. So you're on your own.
Yeah.
So we on our own right away, and we pay back the ticket, you know, whatever it is that we borrow, $700.
Okay, I see. And so, so your brother was running his shop.
Kind of like that. And he say like, oh, we need more help. Let me call my brother.
Yeah.
So he called me. So that's how we start. And then I went to PCC. After 1 year, you have green card. You can pay a resident tuition. So I went there. He went there. That's how we met my wife and her brother. We went to a spring break camping trip.
So you were working, printing, getting $5.25. That's like minimum wage maybe at the time.
Yeah.
How did that become, you know, Dr. Dad? That's what I was
So when I work at the other shop at Yang Yang Printing, I was doing pretty good. Yeah, so between me and my younger brother, that was month that I paid rent for the whole house. I remember $800 for rent. We all live together, six of us. So my dad doing something, my sister doing something, my younger brother doing something, but everyone pay something. I remember I pay rent, $800. So I'm doing that. And then we always want to say, like, we come here to have opportunity, right? Go to college. You know, my dad encouraged it. My uncle encouraged us, sued uncle that from Vietnam. We did a video Zoom like him. It's very hard to do that. Like two family talking to each other. We crying, like, we don't talk like this. When you pick up the phone like that, you have to arrange everything. He said that take the opportunity, go learn, study. So we went to college. I didn't know what to I learned. So I know printing. So I looked up. I want to, after my AA degree, I applied for graphic communication, which is the only school that have that in San Francisco, 4 hour away. So I apply, and a year later, my younger brother followed me, apply, and
same degree.
That's how I start. Same degree. So that's a BS degree, graphic communication. So it's art, design, and then it combined with management. So when I get out, I interned for Dow Jones. We print the Wall Street Journal. And then I end up working for a company to do a financial printing, counterfeiting behind your check, you know, like watermark, like that. I did that, but I didn't like it. Yeah, I go to work and I say, I don't like this. I don't like that. I just don't like this. I don't know what do I want to be, but I don't like it. So at that time, my wife was in second years of optometry school. So I work, I graduate, I work for 3 years. During that time, we got married when she was in her second year. And I support her, so she graduate. When she graduate, I quit. I went back. I want to become a network professional, like a Microsoft network computer.
Yeah.
I study that. I got certified, but it's hard to get the job there. I tried a couple of things, computer science. I was thinking about that, and then at that time I have two three brother-in-law, two of my my wife's older and younger brother, who was the friend I met in PCC that introduced me to her, and then one of her sister married to another. So three dentists in the family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he told me, and then another friend told me that he make $600 a day, $600 a day working for someone, working for Western Dental. I say, oh, I can do that. You know, I can do, I went to a graduation. I say, hey, I can do that. I have very good, my hand skills, very good. I can do that.
From $5.25 per hour.
Yeah, so I stopped everything. I went to PCC, retake. Okay, I hate chemistry.
Oh, you had to go back to school again?
Yes, I had to go back for 2 years to retake
the
science course. But something, maybe going back, connect the dot. I was crazy. I took physics. And I took some other science as my elective in San Luis Obispo, and they counted toward them. So I only had to retake chemistry, OCHEM, and a few biology, and then apply. I got into the school, my top choice, Loma Linda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many years were you in PCC again the second time?
Okay. The first time was me 2 years, and then 3 years in San Luis Obispo, and then two more years in PCC. 1 year to retake, and a year is to apply. When you had to wait for apply and then wait for interview. So in that year, I tutor. I tutor like dental hygienists. They want to apply for dental school. I tutor for the whole center. I tutor AP chemistry for high school students. Doing odd job, you know, waiting, you know. So, and then when I apply, you know, I went to school.
How many years is dental school?
4 years.
So
you 32 went, to 36.
So you went to school 2 years first. So that
You went back to school. What? How old were you?
To retake.
Yeah, the PCC the second time.
PCC, maybe 30.
So you decide to be a dentist
at 30.
At the age of 30.
And by the time you started.
I started 32.
And then you graduated 36.
So this already says a lot, right? That it's never too late to find your path, right?
Yeah.
To find your passion.
Yeah. So I remember that day we was walking in Laguna Beach somewhere with my wife. And then that's when I made my decision. Like I'm 32 at that time. You know, I was complaining. You know, I can do computer science, I can do this, I can do that. But why not? If I don't do it, I will regret what I could be. No, just do it. And I made the decision to apply. And that's it.
So how was it? How was it going to school again at a advanced age? Was it hard?
It's hard with telling other people, like, I'm going back to school. Like, are you crazy? Like, you already graduate. Like, all of that, you know, like, come like that. My best friend, like, you crazy from printing, from graphic communication. He say, what are you going to do? You printing teeth? They were teasing me, a lot of people. Like, so most of my friends already graduate, already dentist, doctor at that time, the one who came at the same time. Mm. So I was a late bloomer.
Late bloomer, yeah.
So I said, it's okay. I just came to, I apply. I'm going back. I want to. This is what I want to do. And I really focused. Wow. I really focused. Because one of my classmates, I think you can graduate as young as 21. 22 or 21 years old, you become a dentist.
Really?
So they are like 16 years younger than me, 14 years younger than me.
Wow.
So they didn't pay attention. But I really pay attention. I went to extra class, how to build a business, I really focused on time.
Okay. So you weren't just going through like learning the technical science of
the
dental.
Side.
You also went to learn the additional classes, how to run a dental business.
Yeah. So my partner at the time, he's Vietnamese too, he quit everything. He was an engineer. Both his and his wife entered the same time, quit everything. So they're really determined. And then when they get out, he opened from scratch in Houston. I want to stay here because of family. I gave myself 1 year. I told myself I will open in 1 year. That first year, I went to a successful practice, $1 million practice. I worked at two different ones. One is cosmetic only. We do veneer, 32 veneer. That's it all day long.
Yeah.
See if I like it.
Yeah.
I got accepted. I did that. I learned how to do that. I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to one with everything, with DentiCal, with a lot of like old type. And I went to another one and I decided I want to be it the way I want.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a practice near one of my work, you know, halfway between Loma Linda and here's Upland. I bought that practice. I love it. I build the way I want. I went paperless right away. I love technology. I love laser. I learned laser from second year. They asked, who want to learn laser? me. So I learned a procedure, like, you, instead of phrenectomy, you know, how to cut the muscle right here. Uh-huh. You can do a knife, bloody 32 stitches, take a long 32 time.
32 stitches, oh, that sounds painful.
Or 2 minutes with a laser. No bleeding.
You no bleeding? Patient. It's like, I don't want to go to.
I love laser. So when I graduate, I bought a laser. And now and then later, I have 3 laser. Everything laser. No shop.
Really?
No shop. I can do filling for you with no shop.
Really?
A lot of them.
I didn't know that exists. So obviously, you love dentistry. So what got you to the other side of no longer practicing?
So I love dentistry. So all I talk about, you know, I really, really go all out. I study. I saw a specialized in laser. I become the first laser in the whole West Coast to use that laser to treat sleep apnea. And then NBC came and air me and promote me because they had never heard about that before. I love technology. So I have that. That's all I talk about. I didn't know anything. Love it. Build my practice to the recession, the 2008. Everyone's, you know, scratching. That's what, when we, I did the best.
2008.
That was the best year. I built the practice, bought the house, got my children. That right by the time I have both kids now, Megan was born 2008. So I just, you know, enjoy life. But then something in me that question, I think we have some issue with, you know, with my son, you know, with my wife, and then with other thing. But now looking back, I think I was now, my language is, I was living in bondage. Living in bondage, been doing the same thing over and over. So it was a dream for me. I got it. I was a C-type girl. It was a dream. I was the first one in the family to become a dentist, become successful. But when I get there, something in me asked me, is there something else? There has to be more than this, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of things happened. And we lost our dad within 6 months to pancreatic cancer. That was an emotional impact. We was having the best time. We took him to Hawaii on a trip, first trip for him, enjoying his time, rebonding. He doing haircut for me. I just want to have him to do haircut so we can talk, you know. Mm-hmm. He did haircut for Andy too. So we hang out, we enjoy, we rebond that, and boom. He was very healthy, 78 years old. We found out he had late stage pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, you can't really tell.
Yeah, you can't tell. Cancer. And he was strong. He was strong. But then I think without knowing what I know now about the mindset, he was strong to a certain time and he gave up. Mm. But he was so strong to survive that in the camp to come back to us. That was a story he told. He had dysentery that... everyone, he have a grave dig for him already, but he wanted to come back to us so much. He survived. But this time, you know, we went again chemo. At the time, I researched a lot. I love research. I say, no chemo. Just do natural treatment, you know. And then he survived. He went a little bit better, but then it took a toll on him. He couldn't. So we lost him. It shook me. It really shook me up. I look at the 5 regret of the death, you know, like don't work too much, live for yourself, being happy, all that. And I went to a PSI seminar with my wife on a Wednesday night, you know, let's go in there and fight. Is there something that would make us happy? We fighting a lot. I was tired a lot. I didn't know what I was. I was blaming other people. I was happy, but there's something in me that has to be something. It's a question. It's a silent question. I went in that class like, oh, why didn't I know about this? I tell everyone, I book the whole, I pay for all my class, on my staff. I tell everyone, I did a presentation in my house to help. I think I have 27 family into that class. And that 27 family really transformed their life. I transformed my life. I love it. That's personal development. Personal Success Institute, PSI seminar. It's amazing. I went to the top of the class, to the summit event, and they called Bob Proctor, my mentor. He was there for 2 hours. I was mesmerized. He's like taking my head, take it out and shake, put it back. I drank so much coffee. I didn't go to the restroom. I didn't want to miss it. I took a picture. I told my wife, do you know who is he? He's Bob Proctor. Who? He's in the movie The Secret. What movie? I didn't know anything about that time. And then Now I found out he was in the movie The Secret. He told me about Think and Grow Rich. Mm. I never read that before. I took the book and I listened to him. He has a ninth grade education. He was sick and tired and got kicked out of Navy. Now he's successful. Mm. And he talked about things that I never heard before. He was falling through the roof like, you can be the best surgeon. You're trading time for money. I said, that was me. As one income, I was trading time for money. I want more freedom. I want to be free to enjoy my time with my kid. Yeah. At the time, there was the prime age.
Yeah.
Boy Scout, sport, all of that. And we're missing out. We're working Saturday. You know, I was up on Thursday, but I was working Saturday and all that. I went home. I cut my Saturday like that. Like no plan. It's just cut. That's it. My wife's like, what? You just cut like that? And I make the announcement like, no Saturday. This is what I want. Mm. No Saturday. So I join. I become a consultant. Mm-hmm. I jump. Mm-hmm. And he always said that make decision from what you want. That's the only thing. Your prerequisite is, do you want it or not? I want more freedom. I don't know how. I was so scared. I saw my vision of 20 years. When I'm 70, I will be doing consulting from home, free time, like blah, 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 all that. And I was crying. I was so scared. How do I do that with what I have today? But he said, that's it. Your goal had to, it's beautiful, but it had to scare you. If you know how to do it, that's not a goal. Mm. And I wrote my vision of 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 20 years, 70. I will have that. And I follow his coaching. I did that when I was 50 years old. I got my complete freedom, 50 years old, 20 years shortcut. Mm. I got out. I sold my practice. I didn't renew my license. I wanted to do more. I was doing part-time consulting. So I want to do more. He said that you can work on your term. I say I only do consulting on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thursday is still my day to take my mom out. I promised my dad to take her out to replace him. You know, take her out all the place that she used to go with my dad. She loved to read. So taking her to take a magazine, newspaper, to eat out, enjoy more time with myself, exercise, ride my bike with my wife, spend time with Andy, with Megan, never missed any of the sport event again. This is freedom. And I help so many other people along the way because there's so many dentists, so many doctor.
Golden handcuff?
Yeah. We call it a golden handcuff. We have the lie, but then in silent. We were joking about that. Still, like, go to your crying room. Crying. You can't even tell your wife. Because look at you. You're a top career, top 5% income. Mm-hmm. You got the respect. And then here you are crying inside, looking for something else. So I found out that that's not me. Like every dentist out there, so many. When I go deep into the consulting with my client, they was crying this. I couldn't even share this with my wife. Can you believe in that?
I think like we all have like a shield.
Yes.
And there's a disconnect and you're able to break down that shield because of trust and that you understand them, that you're able to break free from that.
So that's my new love. I say, this is something I can do beyond dentistry. Dentistry, I help people with dental health, with the whole health, sleep apnea, I can save their life, they can breathe again, all that. But this is the mind, everyone thing, right? Who doesn't think? Mm-hmm. If I can help this, I change generation. They can change the way they think.
Yeah.
They can change how they believe. And then they can transfer it down to the next generation. They would not believe in something that's like ridiculous. Like we have things that's just funny that we believe in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't serve us at all. We still hold on to it.
Yeah.
And I saw that.
I think something really beautiful that I just heard is this. Like for you, you came from a really close-knit family. So family is everything to you. And then second is you ask the right question, you know, to yourself. Like, what am I missing? Like, what do I need more? Like, how can I achieve something? What can I do to, you know, get to that freedom? And number three is more like you have audacious goal. You're not afraid to dream. And that's translate to, you know, not only you, but to people around you. And who you network with is your network. Because like everything you have talked about is sometimes doesn't come from your idea, but it's just a being proximity around the people
exactly
who have that vision. And you're like, okay, this is something that I want to do or can achieve together.
So like one thing as we're wrapping up, I have a couple other questions. But one of them is like, you have like this eternal optimism and this positivity
throughout all the challenges you've had, like we went through quite a bit of it already, like what is the thing that allows you to continue to have that positivity when a lot of people would have given up because you were dealt with so many different difficulties?
Yeah, you went through war, you know,
poverty, having family split apart, changing countries,
your mom, your dad, yeah,
like all of that.
I think like understanding the mind now, understanding who you are, what you believe, what you think. This is what I teach every day now. Mm-hmm. Believe it. And I look back because I have in me, it all along, I have that. I have an intuition in me. I have the courage to follow my heart, to make decision of what is it I want and just jump and do it. And I have an intuition to find and see things that other people don't see yet. Maybe. Mm-hmm. That's why the laser, like not many people know. When I bought that laser, $100,000 laser, top laser in the world, not many people know. When I met Bob, like not many people know about him. Still now, like last time I went to Richard event, not many people know about Bob. But I saw that. This is something that can help me and I make decision. This is what I want. Mm-hmm. I would say I burst through that terror barrier, the fear, because mm-hmm. of what I want on the next time. It's scary. But I would say the courage of going for what you want, follow my heart. I have intuition of this is what I want, follow it. Like that little voice in me is not down in fear. It's a whisper that tell me, do it, do it, do it. Otherwise, you're going to regret. You don't want to be 92 years old sitting in a rocking chair and regretting of what it could be, you know. So jump.
Yeah.
Jump and build a way down. And then when I jump, I look back and said, that was it? Like every time I jump, I look back and say, I laugh. Like that
it's
was it.
It's not as scary as you.
It's not as scary. I went and looked, right? And then go back. So physically too, I did a very scary jump up the cliff to the water, you know, but you know, you should jump. And then after that, you just laugh. Like you just laugh. You change, you know, you change fear to excitement, but also faith on the other side too, when you understand.
So what I heard before is this, like fear is something like that train is going to hit you. Like, but what a lot of people have is anxiety. And a lot of time anxiety is the thing that stops you from, you know, jumping, mm-hmm. right? It's not the real fear. It's the anxiety is what you say to yourself. It's all about the mindset.
Basically, fear is real imminent danger. Mm. Anxiety is what most people use to trap them from doing actions.
Yes. And once you're free that from yourself, from the anxiety, then you think, oh, everything is so silly. Why would I be so, you know, afraid to jump?
Yeah.
Right? Mm. And that's all the obstacle that you have been through, it have make you become the immigrant millionaire.
Yeah.
Right.
So like when we talk, we always ask our guests, like, what was one thing that you, as you wrap up our episode, like what was one thing that you brought in your suitcase that had sentimental value or something that would surprise the audience? What was the thing that you brought?
So I look back here, this is the two notebook, journal, I say, that I bought. Mm-hmm. I have in here all the phone number and the address of my friend.
Yeah.
All the idiom that I learned. We love to learn idiom and opposite. Like when I was learning English, you know, I wrote it in here. And then I think a couple of them are like some of the journal that I did when I first came here.
Like a quick journal that you can share. You can read in Vietnamese and tell the footage. It's like a short one.
It's in Vietnamese.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Vietnamese.
Yeah, if there's something like first few days and you can translate it for us.
Okay.
But read it in Vietnamese.
So in Vietnamese.
Yeah.
I can do both. Tháng 9, ngày 23 tháng 9. That's a month after I arrived. Viết cho chị Trang ân nhận số số. So it's a very short. I wrote to my cousin who was a dentist in Vietnam and my best friend, ân. And that is the day we got social security or welfare or something. Mm. So I just put a little line note here. I thought, oh, it's just, you know, right now, like document it. And then, in here I have address of all my friend, birthday, connection.
Because you're so rooted to Vietnam that you wanted to make sure you can hold that even though you're thousands and thousands of miles away.
I think at that time.
It's so beautiful.
So this is what I bought. And then my ticket, I didn't know I still have the ticket.
Yeah.
And then the calendar of that day that we left Vietnam.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I should look it up. So those are the things I brought with me. But I think I brought my heart with me.
Mm-hmm.
I brought my heart with me.
Yeah, you did. I think like it's your story is like when we've interviewed every immigrant millionaire, what I hear is like the story of one is their family. Like you didn't do this alone. It wasn't like you came on in a vacuum. It's like everyone contributed in some way financially, morally, everything to get you here. And you didn't leave anyone behind. You still have that. And like the other thing that I noticed about your story is like your willingness to try the thing that scares you the most is what most people are completely the opposite of what most people are willing to do. They want to stay safe and in their comfort zone, but you're willing to step beyond that so that you achieve like your story of going from a kid who was making a paintbrush to someone who like transitioned to successfully sell a dental practice that was like a cutting edge what first in the West Coast is something that is completely inspiring to everyone, even us. And just want to thank you again for coming on because your story is important to have documented from now and for forever as for everyone else who's looking for that. Last thing I wanted to ask you, if you go forward 100 years and you have a 100-year legacy, what are a few keywords or phrases that you want your great-great-great-grandkids to say about you? What would that be?
So this is what I want to leave behind for my children or children, that when they look back, they will have the struggle, the challenge, whatever they want. They just see that I have the courage to make the change that I want so that they can have the courage to make the change that they want. So the one message I want to leave behind is that if I can do it, you can do it too, easily or even better, because we are all the same. You know, now when I understand the universal mind, I said, if I can do it, you can do the same. And I want to help. First, I help myself, invest in myself and my mind. So before I can help other people, I have to fill my cup first. I have to be who I want to be first. And then I can help my family. Once I help my family, I can help the community. I can help the community, the culture, the country, the world bigger. So that's something I want to share with everyone. You know, invest in you first, in your mind, to understand who you are, why you're here, what is your purpose. And with that, you can see there's so much in you. You discover that you have everything in you from the day you were born to be happy, healthy, and wealthy. But the outside environment, it can be parent, teacher, culture, religion, will tell you all the why. And that program, we call it a program, it's limiting belief, that will hold you back, but it's not your fault. But once you have the understanding that you can change this, you have the control of everything. It's your choice. Mm-hmm. You can change this. You can learn and change this. It's a process that I went to. It changed me. I can do it too. Anyone can do it. Doesn't matter how much education do you have. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, he only have a 9th grader for education. He doesn't. Some people don't know how to read. Mm-hmm. And they create a set like that. And there's people who didn't have education, like you guys. You guys start from nothing at all. You start from scratch again, your story, and where you are right now. So those are the things that I want to leave behind so that they look back, they will say that, oh, if he can do it, we can do it too. That's the story. And then I want to tell the story. The crab story, I don't know if you heard about the crab story before. The story is this, you know, there's a fisherman going to and he saw a crab bucket and there's some crab that going outside. And then they say, why don't you close it? And then the local people say, don't worry. There's one come out, the other one will put them back in. Mm-hmm. So they never escape. But my story will be different. When I get to the top, I see what's outside. I'm going to pull someone out. So we don't leave anyone behind.
That's awesome. That's
Thank
a really
so
great,
much.
Great so, so with that, you know, I believe that I help my family of both sides, my wife's side. We're very close, both sides, very close to help and change. A lot of us, you know, don't know the power that we have in our mind. Mm-hmm. And struggle, we call it needlessly struggle. But now you understand it, you can do anything you want. You can get anything you seriously want if you put your mind to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you for coming
here
today.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a great representative of the immigrant millionaire and of the movement as well.
Thank you for doing this. You know, I hope I can share with many other people and then you continue to do this because this is awesome to hear when other people outside, they see that they can be inspired by it. They can follow our footsteps, you know.
Exactly. Be the change, right? Like, not just to your great grandkids now. This is like to everyone else who listen to this.
So that's what I want to do. I want to help as many dentists, medical doctor, entrepreneur, business owner out there, because, you know, there's unlimited potential in you.
All right. Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
Yay.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.